Sabina Matos made history when she became Rhode Island's first Latina lieutenant governor in 2021. Now she's trying to make history again as the first Democratic woman to represent the Ocean State in Congress. But there are a number of other candidates vying for the first congressional district seat being vacated by David Cicilline, including State Senator Sandra Cano of Pawtucket. Matos has steadily built her political profile since coming to Rhode Island from the Dominican Republic as a young woman. But does she deserve a promotion so soon after winning election as lieutenant governor last year? This week, I'm going in-depth with Lieutenant Governor Sabina Matos. Welcome back to the Publix Radio.
Hi. Thank you, Ian. Thank you for having me here.
Lieutenant Governor Matos, it was less than 6 months ago when you were elected to your office. The general presumption among voters was that you would serve a full four-year term. So is this a violation of the promise that you made to voters that you are now running in the first congressional district?
No, it's not. Actually, right now for me and any other elected official that is contemplating running, it's not a violation. I always, when I look at myself and my political career, I consider myself to be a public servant. I have always looked for ways in which I can better serve the people of the state of Rhode Island. This is new. We have no clue that Congressman Cicilline was going to be resigning. So right now, I just analyzed the situation. I thought that this is a way in which I can continue to serve the state of Rhode Island.
You've been lieutenant governor since 2021 when Governor McKee selected you for that position, elevating you from your former role as president of the Providence City Council. What would you say you've accomplished as lieutenant governor that would justify a promotion from the voters to Congress?
Okay, I have to say early on, as you mentioned, I have been in public office for more than a decade, first at the local level and then now as lieutenant governor for the past 2 years. I have worked hard together with the governor to ensure that we got vaccinations out to every municipality, every community. One of the things that I'm the proudest of has been my work and advocacy around housing and being a strong advocate to ensure that we were able to allocate $250 million for housing in the state of Rhode Island. So those are some of the things that I can tell you about. But my office is very active and doing a lot of work with the Long-Term Care Coordinated Council and always looking at the connection of the work that we do and housing, because everything comes back to housing.
There's a big field of Democrats running in the first congressional district. You're one of at least eight candidates, and there could be more, perhaps even by the time this interview airs. If we take out former Republican Alan Waters, there seems to be a lot of overlap on where the Democrats in the race stand on issues. Can you point to any significant differences between where you stand and where most of the other Democrats stand on key issues?
I think it's good for the voters of the state of Rhode Island, for CD1, to be able to have so many good candidates to pick from. I can tell you that my experience and my work in public service for more than a decade, working at the local level, working as a member of a legislative body in the Providence City Council, being the president of the Providence City Council, my work in the past 2 years as lieutenant governor, going to every community in the state of Rhode Island and advocating for every community, I think that would be the difference probably that the voters can see between me and other candidates.
You recently met with the Laborers International Union in Washington, D.C. What was their message for you?
I was in D.C. for the Lieutenant Governor's Conference. And Laborers has been a good friend of mine since early on. We have done a lot of good work together in the city of Providence first and now at the statewide. So it was good to go and see old friends.
We're talking here with Lieutenant Governor Sabina Matos, a candidate in Rhode Island's 1st Congressional District. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the economy. There is a lot of uncertainty now nationally and in Rhode Island. It's having a chilling effect on development projects like the planned soccer stadium in Pawtucket. Does the state have any sort of backup plan or strategy for overcoming these economic headwinds?
So right now, there are things that are out of the control of the state or the local government for so many of those projects that have been we have been working on. As we know, the economy in general, the interest rates going up is having an effect on the possibilities of some of those projects to take place. The situation that's happening in the banking industry with some bankings that has been getting into trouble. I think all of that creates an atmosphere that is challenging and for some of these projects to move. But I feel confident that we're going to get through this and those projects are going to come to fruition.
Former Providence Mayor Joe Paolino is a big downtown Providence property owner. He's calling for $25 million in tax credits that were planned for the Fain Tower project to be used for the Superman revitalization. Would you support that?
Well, I have been a supporter of the TSAs in the city of Providence, but also I have been a supporter of the reforms to ensure that the TSAs for those that don't understand the terms and are not familiar with it, which is the tax stabilization agreements, that those tax stabilization agreements are fair to the taxpayers and to the residents of the city of Providence.
Okay, but specifically the question is whether you would support shifting $25 million in tax credits planned for Fain Tower to the Superman project. Do you support or oppose that?
As long as those TSAs have the support and the community benefits in there and make sure that they're following all of the rules that we have established on the TSAs to ensure that the taxpayers are protected.
Governor McKee this week called on the Federal Reserve to stop raising interest rates for some of the reasons that we discussed. Do you agree with the governor that the Fed should stop raising interest rates?
Again, the economy right now is it's in a tough situation, especially with the banking industry having so many challenges. I believe that as of right now, the Fed should be stopping increasing the interest rate. I think it's about time for us to be getting people more comfortable with spending money. And I can tell you right now, there's many people here in Rhode Island that were not even trying to put their house in the market because they don't want to put their house in the market because they're not going to be able to find another one to buy. Or they have a little bit concerns about the interest rate. So I think it's about time to stop the increase in the interest rate.
Fed Chairman Jay Powell says the rates are being increased to try and curb inflation. So would it be irresponsible to stop raising interest rates because it's causing some stress for development projects if the net effect would be to continue inflation?
The idea is to curb the inflation. But if we are going to continue to increase the interest rate and then we're going to froze the economy and no one wants to move and no one wants to do anything, then that's going to create the same problem that we're trying to solve.
Rhode Island has a longtime dubious distinction as a FILO state, first in, last out, when there's an economic downturn. Do you think the state is still in that kind of situation where we're particularly vulnerable to an economic downturn?
I believe that the state of Rhode Island has been changing the perception. Our economy has been doing well. We have so many good projects in planning on. Again, the challenge is right now what is happening nationally, but I don't see the state of Rhode Island as being the first one going into a recession.
The McKee-Matos administration will mark its 100 days since being inaugurated in about 2 weeks. There's still a large number of state departments with temporary directors. Why is it that your administration has had so much difficulty finding permanent directors for about 10 state agencies?
The administration has been actively searching for directors for the different agencies. Those agencies have a direct impact on the life of the people of Rhode Island, and that's our decision that shouldn't be rushed. And we should not be just putting someone just to say that it has we have someone in there. So I trust the process that the governor is going through with his staff to make sure that we get the right directors for the agencies.
Governor McKee has an ambitious goal of having Rhode Island students match the academic performance of their counterparts in Massachusetts by 2030. The state has struggled for many years, as you know, to make improvements on public education. Is that goal realistic, given the meager progress so far on improving public education?
I believe it is realistic. And the way how the governor is planning on doing this and making sure that we support the students and from any time during the school hours, but also times outside of the school work, by making sure that we have programs that support them. It could be in catching up with their math and science programs that we don't want to call it after school. What we call it is all learning all the time. We have to create a culture in which we're always thinking about how to improve, how to learn. That is not thinking about just the dates of the school year. So we're thinking about what happens after school, but what happens during the summer. How can we continue to have that learning culture to be a constant thing in our state?
Rhode Island is a very blue state, as we know. Despite that, Democrats have had some difficulty getting elected, even in a community like Johnston. Last November, the Republicans won 4 of 5 state general offices in voting just in Johnston. From your perspective as a longtime Democratic elected official, what do Democrats need to do differently to win back voters in a community like Johnston?
So I don't like to describe the community as being all one way. Like we're very Democrat, we're very blue. I think that every community is different. I think that what we have to do is understand what is affecting every municipality. What are the challenges that they're facing with? And not try to present one message that is going to be the one thing that everybody's going to resonate and respond to. Community like Johnston, we have to take our time to listen to what are the needs that they have, what are the challenges that they have, and we have to respond to those.
We've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us, Lieutenant Governor Sabina Matos, a candidate in Rhode Island's 1st Congressional District.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Rhode Island does not typically get a lot of raves for its tax and business climate. But after shedding its former nickname of Taxachusetts, Massachusetts is getting unwelcome attention for an additional tax on upper-income residents. A new report by an accounting group finds that more people are leaving the Bay State due to its tax climate. Can Rhode Island benefit by comparison? For more insights on Rhode Island politics, check out my Friday TGIF column, posting around 4 today on my Twitter at Ian Don and at thepublicsradio.org. That's our show for this week. Our producer is James Baumgartner. I'm Ian Donis, and I'll see you on the radio.